Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me saying got em. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges, I yearn for the feeling I earn. All my winners will turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict,
Russin Rocky.
Other names, Trade X5. Let's go.
I am Rocky Petrella, and I have a trading problem.
I'm Mark Shu, and I also have a trading problem.
I'm Evan Sather, and I don't trade enough.
There you go. Hey, everybody. Welcome to session 416 of the Trade Addicts podcast. Let me see if I get this right. Even though the network went away, the DAP is still here to stay. Give me DAP. There we go. Okay. So, as you heard, Frank was supposed to be on tonight. In the middle of the day, he all of a sudden got very sick and is not feeling well. So I have a friend of the show, Mark Shu, filling in for Frank once again this week. Mark, how's it going tonight?
Oh, it's going good. Always happy to be back here on Trader Addicts. You know, I don't do as much podcasting and streaming as I used to, but it's always good to be back and talk shop with you, Ruck. How are you?
Good, good. And Evan, nice to meet you. And why don't you tell everyone who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do.
Absolutely. Hello, everybody. My name is Evan Sather. I'm known as Barely Fantasy on most social media platforms. I don't participate on Twitter anymore, but I am active on Blue Sky. I also have Barely Fantasy on YouTube, and I'm also one of four people with the Fantasy Football Network, which we are getting started. We have the YouTube channel created. We just don't have any content posted on there quite yet. We're going to get that going within the next week or so. Right now, Google is a little suspicious about our brand new account, thinking that it's just a bit fishy looking, like maybe a bot created it, but we're just going to get that straightened out and then we'll start getting content put on there. We're pretty much a brand new team. We're also a network of multiple channels between Barely Fantasy, Fantasy Football Tavern, and The Extra Point, which will be an episode that will also be recorded tomorrow on The Extra Point.
Okay, sounds good. So as with all first-time guests, we like to do our little interview to get to know you. So Evan, how long have you been playing fantasy?
I have been playing consistently now for 10 years. I first started tinkering with it, I believe it was my senior year of high school in 2000. Actually, it was my freshman year of college, 2004. I don't remember what that team looked like. It was a free Yahoo League, and I didn't really pay that much attention to it because, you know, free Yahoo League, I didn't care that much about it. I didn't have any friends back then who were actively playing. It took me until 2016 to do it. I was doing just Yahoo redraft leagues for money. And then I got into Dynasty in 2017, which was put on ESPN at the time, which if you can imagine playing in a Dynasty League in ESPN today, you'd want to barf.
Yes.
But this was before Sleeper wasn't much of a Dynasty platform yet. It just started off as just notifications for actual sleepers in your lineups. So we moved to Sleeper, and then I end up leaving that league for reasons I'm going to get into later in this episode. I started my own Dynasty League in 2020, just a 10-team, one-quarterback PPR league with just a bunch of friends. And maybe a lot of people don't consider that to be competitive enough, but it's all about how much you have fun with it, right?
Right, yeah. That's what this is all about. This podcast was started on when Russ was here. It's always about fun more than anything else. That's why all the Trade Addicts leagues had very low buy-ins. It's encourage trading, have fun, don't worry about the money. But anyway, speaking of Trade Addicts, what are some of the best? You can start whichever one you want. Best trades, worst trades. Which do you want to start with?
So I don't actually believe I've ever had a trade that ever made a big difference in like a playoff push or a championship. There's never anything that comes to mind, but I do have a worst trade offer that was given to me. I still have that text thread too. This guy actually was the commissioner of the first ever Dynasty League I was in. September 7, 2019, he was trying to get my newly drafted Damian Harris from me, newly drafted to the New England Patriots at the time. He was trying to convince me to take either Kalen Ballage or Carlos Hyde straight up for Damian Harris. And that was a deal that I was really trying to negotiate. Give me a draft pick. Give me some help at wide receiver. This guy was just like, no, I don't want to give up a wide receiver. No, I don't want to give up a draft pick. Come on, man. I'm giving you an actual upgrade on your bench. You're actually going to start one of those guys. Damian Harris was third in the depth chart behind Rex Burkhead. It was such a stupid, like, used car salesman type of offer. It was the first time I really ever had to say no to such a bad trade offer that would have absolutely killed my running back depth had I taken it. It was the first time ever I was just glad that I actually turned that down. I ended up leaving that league after that season anyway for a lot more reasons than just that. But yeah, that commissioner was a bit of a slime ball when it came to trade offers.
that's the worst. And I'm sure we've all had our many shares of horrible trade offers. But is there any best trade that sticks out to you that you've made?
I honestly wish I could say that there was one that sticks out. I honestly don't have one. I think my attitude is just different about trading in general, where it's like, if I can get quarterback help on this keeper league team, if I can get wide receiver or tight end help, that's great that it can take me to a championship. But I look at it like, am I winning championships? I don't care about winning trades. I care about winning championships. So I don't have those trades in front of me, but I did two big trades in an old keeper league that doesn't exist anymore that helped me with tight end depth and quarterback depth that ended up leading me to the championship. I believe this was a 12 team keeper league that I ended up winning. So I won it 2 years in a row and then they shut it down. I think they were just scared of me.
Yeah, couldn't take it anymore. And what is the guiding principle you have in trading in Dynasty?
So I have an old YouTube video that I uploaded nearly 2 years ago on my Barely Fantasy channel that goes over a lot of do's and don'ts when it comes to trading. So my general rule of thumb is just don't be a dick about it, you know? Actually talk to your trade partner to see what they're looking for that would actually help their team. Because at the end of the day, you have to give if you want to get. And a lot of people don't necessarily like to do that. They'll either just ignore trade offers or they just won't do any trading unless they feel like they're winning the trade. So that's my general philosophy with it is, you know, just be communicative. Don't be afraid to talk to people when it comes to negotiating for the trade that's going to benefit both sides. And that's how you get it done, because blind trade offers don't work.
Yeah, and I definitely... the thing that's always some of the best advice is do not worry about winning the trade. Like, you never, someone's always going to quote unquote win the trade in the moment, but it's often the loser of the trade that wins it in a dynasty trade in the long run anyway. So we will go now into the news, and it's the time of year where there is not much news. So this shouldn't be too much here. It's mostly contract signings right now. Breece Hall, 3 year, $43.5 million extension, 29 guaranteed. Dynasted, of course, our steadfast listener, giving us tons of questions every week, had a question relating to this. He said, I saw this point made by someone on here, but can't remember who. Apologies to that person for lack of credit, but is Breece Hall the first guy in history to see his dynasty stock drop after signing a big extension? How are you thinking about Breece now, Evan?
I still have Breece Hall as a top 15 running back in PPR leagues, and I think he can absolutely provide low-end RB1 value. Now, because I think what happens with a lot of these stud players like a Breece Hall is that people see the NYJ tag on them for New York Jets, and they immediately have that stench of failure, that mentality where they're just thinking, I got to get off this guy because he plays for the Jets and he sucks. But it's not true. Aaron Glenn actually believes in him for succeeding with this offense. He went out and drafted Omar Cooper to back up Garrett Wilson. Right now, their quarterback situation is not exactly sexy, I'll put in air quotes for a lack of a better way to put it, but Geno Smith can still throw the football. He's not very mobile anymore, but he can still pull off a spin move if he has to and get rid of the football. He just looked terrible in the Raiders because, well, the Raiders' offensive line is worse than the Jets, dare I say. But no, I still want Breece Hall, though. I think you can easily buy low thanks to his dynasty stock dropping, and if you can get him for anything less than a first-round draft pick, I think you win big in adding to your running back depth because Breece is the man. If anything, this sucks for Braylon Allen and Isaiah Davis.
What do you think, Mark?
I mean, as far as people who have that stink of the Jets and turn away, guilty. Really, no, I think where he is kind of right where he needs to be, I think. I mean, like, really, if we think about it, he's served as like a 15 running back, 15 to 20 the past 2 years, and that's with him playing almost the full season in the past 3 years. He had that really big RB3 season, I think, 3 years ago. But I don't really believe in the Jets right now. They're probably looking for a better quarterback in this coming draft. So with him signing this new contract, you know, I think he's a good enough player. He's going to have big weeks for you, and he'll have RB1 weeks for sure. But I'm not always feeling that great about the line. I don't have that much confidence in Geno or in Aaron Glenn. And, you know, if they, on the back end of the season, start to tank, who says that, you know, Breece is going to be playing the rest of those games now that he's got a big contract?
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, he's definitely still good value, but I agree. Like, it's I know Frank is out there sad somewhere, because we talked a lot about the potential of him moving on from the Jets because of his contract situation. And I think we would have seen a huge, potential huge jump up in value depending on where he landed if he had gotten out of New York. But sadly, he will be a Jet now for most of the prime of his career, but still worthwhile, you know, player to own.
If I could add one more thing about Breece before we move forward, he still ran for 1,065 yards last season in a really, really bad Jets offense. What hurt him was that he wasn't seeing as many targets in the passing game, and he wasn't getting in the end zone as much because, well, it's the Jets. But with the volume that he's getting, I'm still putting him at a low-end RB1.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think he will be a low-end RB1. I guess I think it's not so much that his value drops, I think, which is what the Dynasty put here, is more we were hoping for a leap, and that's not going to happen. He's kind of what he is.
Right. On keep, trade, cut, he's RB14, and I just kind of think right now with everything, like, that kind of seems pretty aptly priced. Like, it just doesn't seem like it's that egregious that he's a few spots back. Maybe you try and go for him, but I think I'd be waiting for him to go a little lower before I'm really making him a target.
Okay. And the other pieces of news, Juwan Jennings signing a 1-year deal with the Vikings, David Njoku 1-year deal with the Chargers, which also got us another listener question from Kevin. With Njoku signing with the Chargers, how do you view him and Gadsden? Buy, sell, or hold them, Evan?
Aronde Gadsden is still a very strong hold. If you look at the numbers that Gadsden was putting up in the second half of the season after the Chargers' bye week, he was definitely struggling, even against easy defenses like the Las Vegas Raiders. 2 targets, 1 catch for 27 yards, and then he went up against the Dallas Cowboys, which are horrible at defending the pass, 1 catch for 7 yards. This young man still has a lot of developing to do, and I think that's why they brought in David Njoku on a 1-year rental deal. Get Gadsden some more reps and development behind an established veteran with a good set of hands in David Njoku. And Njoku could, I think he could provide some sneaky high-end tight end 2 value in some weeks, considering that he's still not even 30 yet, and he's actually in a respectable offense now. But I don't think Njoku is going to be the guy that the Chargers are going to lean on forever. They want Gadsden to be the guy, and Gadsden showed what he can do in the first half of that season last year. So I don't think they're going to be pushing him aside just for an older veteran. So if you have Dynasty shares of Gadsden, like I said on my Barely Fantasy YouTube short about him, hold him. Do not let him go.
A lot of times we see it with young tight ends. It often takes like 3 years for them to like fully develop into what they're going to be anyway. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely probably a step back this year with Njoku on the team, and just in terms of production. But value-wise, he's definitely a hold for me too. Mark, what are your thoughts on Njoku as a Charger?
I think if I'm looking at the two of them together, I'm probably more interested in Njoku this year, because I imagine he's going to be much cheaper, especially in Dynasty. Mm-hmm. I think he'll probably get more of that, but really they're both going to be inconsistent tight end twos probably. And maybe one of them ends up being a tight end 3. So again, not something I'm targeting per se, But like hope, kind of just hopeful and holding what I do have. And if I, you know, if the time's right and they start having a few big games, I'm going to try and trade them then.
Okay. So now this is the point, Evan, we always like to let the, guests choose, and especially we have a lot of, for the first time in a while, we have a lot of both trades and listener questions this week. So do you want to go start with the listener questions or start with the trades?
I don't have a strong preference either way. I guess we can dive into the listener questions.
Okay, let's get into them. Andrew Loophole at Andrew Loophole on Twitter. What's the deal with Travion Henderson in Dynasty? What is his value? That is a good question.
So I think the New England Patriots are still going to remain a run-heavy offense. I don't think that whoever fills in for Stephon Diggs is... I don't think the Patriots are going to move far away from their passing game, but I still think they're going to run the ball like they always did, even during the Belichick era. Ramondre Stevenson, he's still going to be a good backup to Travion Henderson, but this is very much a typical 60-40 split, depending on game script, between Henderson and Stevenson. So if you have a Travion Henderson, I'm looking at him as a high-end RB2.
Yeah, and that's almost exact. I was just looking on the Trade Addict scoring. It's almost exactly how their points kind of bore out. It was like literally a point and a half apart. So it is very much a fairly even split. Mark, do you think Henderson can take over more of the load this year? Are we going to see more of this same, or what are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I think Henderson probably got a bad rap from how his playoff performance and Super Bowl performance was, but I'm actually not that surprised that that's kind of how Vrabel decided to deploy his backfield and go with a veteran in a, you know, in more high pressure situations going deeper and deeper into the playoffs. You definitely saw flashes from Travion last year. You definitely saw him be a rookie at a lot of different times last year. And I can only imagine that he's going to develop. It's not like they got some, you know, stud in the draft. I mean, no one's getting jammed up by Jam Miller. So we're probably going to be all right with the two of them taking most of the share. And again, like at the very least, he'll be a nice, a nice RB2 in certain weeks and then a flex play in others. So you're not getting what you wanted from him when you drafted him. If you've been drafting and holding this whole time, you have to accept that. But also, I think there is plenty of room for that to come back this year.
I will say, too, I like the point you made that there's not, like, much else there. If one of them were to go down, then I think you have a really nice back, but like an 80-20 type load split on your hand. And I think either of them can actually be – even. I still think Ramondre is a pretty solid running back, and he's going to be in a good offense. So, but especially Henderson, if Ramondre were to go down, Henderson's stock would go up big time.
And it's not like Henderson has been a pinnacle of health either. Yeah. Sorry. Stevenson has not been a pinnacle of health.
Yeah. One more thing I'll add about Henderson as well. So he was actually taking kick returns until week 8 last year, which definitely showed in his rushing touches there. They wanted to slowly bring him in to make sure that he's actually NFL ready with Ramondre Stevenson. And then after they pulled him off of kick return duty starting in week 9, that was when we started seeing consistent double digit touches. I don't think that's going away. I think Henderson is definitely ahead of Ramondre Stevenson in this backfield. And I don't think that this is going to be as different as I said earlier, like typically like a 60-40 split.
Okay, and our next is from Kevin at clearly not Kevin on Blue Sky. Frank's question on Twitter and Blue Sky was about, are you excited about the NFL schedule release? Kevin says he likes it so we can figure out which bye weeks to prepare our teams for. And then he asks, where's the best place to get an Italian beef in the Chicagoland area? Which I think this was directed at Frank, since he is from Chicago. And Frank's answer is Johnny's Beef, Elmwood Park. His order is combo dipped hot peppers. So there you go, Kevin. But we'll now move on to our weekly Dynastud question segment, because he loves to flood us with questions. First thing he asked about rookie draft season, it's well upon us. Who are the guys you've been walking away with more than expected? Was that on purpose or just the way boards fell? Any guys you like you haven't gotten as much of because of how things played out? For me, it's Casey Concepcion and Stowers. Evan, I don't know how many leagues you're in. Me and Frank, and I don't know if Mark is in as many as he maybe used to be, but we're definitely in too much. So I don't know how many leagues you're in, but have enough to kind of answer this question, or?
So I've done two rookie drafts so far, and I think Ka'Tron Allen seems to be the one player that I now have two shares of in two different leagues. It just happened to fall my way. In a 12-team Dynasty League, I got Ka'Tron Allen at the 202, and then in a 12-team one quarterback Dynasty League, I got Ka'Tron Allen at the 301. So it was a little different between both of those leagues because everybody has different sets of people who value the players differently, where some guys went over other guys. But yeah, I just happened to get Ka'Tron Allen at a discount, hoping that he leads this Washington running back by committee, hoping that he shows us something. But outside of that, I don't really have a lot of crossover with all of my rookies so far, being that I drafted from the 108 in the 112 team. What's this called? The other. I think they're both one. Yeah, they're both one quarterback. They're almost identical. I'm struggling to figure out like which to call them. But yeah, so I drafted from the 108 in one league and then the 101 in the other. So I got myself some Jeremiah Love.
Okay, what about you, Mark? Any guys that you're seeing?
Well, you know me. I probably don't have picks in most of these situations, or at least not early picks in most of these situations. I usually trade my picks away. But the one that I got, you know, first round, I did get Concepcion and Stowers in both of them, so I felt really good about, you know, that Dynastud also went there, so shout out to Dynastud for that. The people in the back end of the draft where I'm getting a lot of my picks, I have a lot of third and fourth rounders. I end up getting a lot of Damon Claiborne. I feel like, you know, he's a guy that you can easily get in the mid third in a lot of the drafts that I've been going to. There's really not that much that he has to like overtake. You have a 31-year-old Aaron Jones, who I'm sure will not play all 17 games this year. You have, you know, Jordan Mason, who's 26 and really wasn't showing all that much for Minnesota last year. So I kind of like him as a dart throw. And again, he's been a good mid third round pick. The only place that I didn't end up getting him in any of my drafts, he went at the 111. Which I found a little crazy, but yeah. You know, maybe that's what you need to do to get him away from me. The other people I've been taking a lot of in the fourth round is Talen Green. Not that I really think there's going to be much of anything there, but I can only imagine that the Browns are going to be bad again this year and that they're going to recycle through quarterbacks and maybe he'll get some starts at the back end of the year that might be able to, you know, buoy me at any point during the year. If there's like, if I have an injury or something like that, I might be able to get a start or two out of that guy. Or maybe he looks good. And then the other is Elijah Surratt, who is also going, I thought he'd be going a little closer to the back end of the second, but he has been creeping into some of the third rounds.
I got him in a fourth round recently.
Right. He's going a lot later than I've expected, to the point where, yeah, I was looking at my 312 and I thought that I was going to get him in one draft and he just missed me. So I feel really good about those three where I've been getting them in the third and fourth round. But I, you know, in this draft, it's hard. Like third and fourth round picks are way different. I feel like, I mean, obviously at that point you're getting your guy, right? So there's that part of it. And I feel like, you know, I'm just looking for like what makes the most sense. Like if somebody's going to hit, where is it going to be? It's going to be, you know, in places where there needs to be a little more opportunity and maybe they're a good fit. I think Claiborne, I think Surratt, and I think Talen Green, even though I'm not a huge fan of him as a quarterback prospect, probably have, you know, the most, the best pathway to opportunity.
Yeah,
Mark, can you run that by me one more time? Did you say Damon Claiborne went at the 111 in one league?
The 111, yes, he did.
A sixth round, was this a Vikings homer?
I mean, I couldn't tell you, but I would. I mean, look, I didn't make the pick. I'm just saying that's the only place that I wasn't able to get him in the third.
And I have one of the TA drafts, the finished drafts up, just so I can refresh like all the later names and try to remember who I picked more than like once or twice. And Claiborne in that draft went 312. Oh, that was actually you. I'm looking at the TA 3 draft. I didn't even realize that when I said it. But looking, yeah, it's funny. In the first round, I don't have a ton of first round picks, but There's not one guy. I think I have like a share of like Tate, Sadiq, Lemon, Stowers, Boston. I'm just trying to get a little bit of everybody. Most of my picks, thankfully, aren't in the super high range. So a lot of them have been later. In terms of like seconds and thirds, I also have been picking a decent amount of strides. I think I've had about 10 drafts so far. And then another guy I've been grabbing kind of late second, if he's still there, is Emmett Johnson, mainly just because it's the Chiefs and you never know what's going to happen there. Plus it should be, once Mahomes is back, it should be a good offense. It's always, you know, it's always a very, maybe not high end, but above average offense, as long as you have Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback. And yeah, like I said, it's not like there's any stud running back in place already. So I always generally like to go with running backs and tight ends in the later rounds anyway. But even I feel like in the later rounds, I have been kind of all over the place just because I don't love anyone in this. Like normally there will be a guy I'm picking over and over again, and there's not really that guy for me. Like I said, Johnson, I've been drafting Oscar Delp a little bit when I get the chance, tight end, day two tight end, I believe. So guys like that, like I said, I always like to go for tight ends just for the hell of it. Sometimes they pop, and then running backs, either going to be backup running backs that you can always potentially flip them later if they get, even though they happen to start in the rookie year or something like that. So, I think those are the main names I can think of that I've been drafting.
I got Emmett Johnson at the 109 in one league.
Oh, that's early.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Jonah Coleman, but then I followed that up with Katron Allen, so at least I got my guy, being that Jadarian Price went at the 106. And, you know, when you draft from the 109, you take what you can get.
Yeah, and especially this year, the late first round is just like the Wild West, basically. Like, it's right. Whoever you like.
It's been a very long second round, really. If we're
yeah, exactly.
Like, and honestly, I feel like, you know, I only got him in one spot because I really only had, I think I only had 2 second round picks in among my 5 leagues. But I felt like Malachi Fields was dropping further than I expected. And I was feeling really like, honestly, if I had more second round picks, I feel like I would have taken him. And I don't even like, I'm a Giants fan. I don't really like taking Giants players, but I felt pretty good about where he was going because he was going mid to late second round in a lot of places too.
Oh, and Skylar Bell is another guy I've been kind of drafting almost solely just because Jeff Bell said he likes him. So, you know, the Bills wide receiver corps has some opportunity. So, okay, next question from Dynastud. How do you feel about stacks in regular, not best ball dynasty leagues? For instance, I realized one team I own accidentally got both Tate and Wandale. Is there value in my trading for Ward in case Dayball really does turn that offense around as hoped? Mark, I'll start with you on this one as the resident Giants fan who has seen Dayball offense in action and Wandale for that matter.
So as far as stacks go, I'm fine with it. I don't think it's as highly prioritized, especially because you have to make the starts. And usually when you're doing a best ball tournament, you're looking at multiple stacks among different quarterbacks or receivers or any of that. I think, honestly, though, if you're looking at it, I would probably say you don't want to necessarily go for Ward. Like, you have a stack right now. Tate and Wandale, I would still consider to be a stack. If they are popping off, that's great in any given week. I don't know if you're ever going to really feel super comfortable about playing both of them together unless it really hits. But I also wouldn't trade for Ward preemptively with the hope that that happens. Because then you have 3 Titans on your offense. And when's the last time we can really say like, oh yeah, the Titans have really blown up and set the world on fire. And again, like, I don't really believe that much in Brian Daboll. I think Cam Ward definitely showed some flashes last year, but I think maybe your better bet is to hope that this stack that you have, and I know he's talking more about quarterback to receiver stack, but this Titan stack, see if that's profitable for you in your leagues, if it's scoring you points, and then maybe adjust it after that. Not go for it now, and because you're probably going to end up, if somebody sees you trading for Ward, they're going to say, "Oh, he wants the stack. I'm gonna bid him up. I'm gonna ask him to pay a little more."
Yeah, my thought on stacks is basically I don't really care. It's a nice little bonus, like maybe a tiebreaker in a trade or something. Like it pushes you, maybe pushes me over the edge if it's a stack on a good team. Like trading for, you know, a Titan doesn't move the needle for me, basically, like in this example. But like, yeah, if I'm getting like T. Higgins and I have Joe Burrow, then maybe that makes the trade a little more valuable to me slightly when I see it come in. But in general, I'm not going out searching for stacks. I don't think it's a big factor either way. But Evan, thoughts on stacks in general, and if you want to comment on this Titans question here.
Yeah, so in general, I would say that stacks are not mandatory at all for regular Dynasty leagues. Love them in best ball, but in Dynasty, you don't need them. And actually, if you have stacks, they can pay off, but they can also really hurt you in certain weeks and when the offense really, really sucks, depending on just how well they perform. So this particular stack that you've got between Carnell Tate, Wandale Robinson, and now you've got, is there value in trading for Cam Ward? I would say, well, maybe. If Cam Ward is actually going to add to your quarterback room, go right ahead and trade for him. But I would say between Carnell Tate and Wandale Robinson, just trade one of them. I don't agree with keeping the starting two wide receivers from the same team in general. I always recommend trading one of them just so that you can at least maybe grab another wide receiver from another team, grab another draft pick, or get some help at another position. But it's your team. You'll be able to make that call, and wishing you the best with that, Dynastud.
Yeah.
In this situation, though, I don't think that, I mean, like, I don't know if anyone's going to be going out and looking to buy Wandale Robinson right now either. So like, I don't see a problem with him holding on to it. I don't think he's going to be stacking them on a regular basis. Just, I mean, like, in what world right now are we like going to trust that? But it could end up happening. That's where the potential comes in. But no, you're absolutely right, Evan. I think for the most part, it can end up hurting you. Cause again, it's not like best ball where if they blow up, they're automatically in your lineup. You have to make that decision, and you're making that decision with the Titans. And again, I don't like to always just go on it being the team, but like, I would like to see it play out first before I'm like, yeah, let's buy in and triple stack the Titans.
Okay, so the next question is we're going back to the Jets. Well, a large part of Garrett Wilson's dynasty value in recent seasons has been volume. With the Jets investing big draft capital in two other pass catchers, should we be moving him down or selling before people realize the volume decreases? Or do you need to see Cooper/Sadiq hit first? Evan, what about you?
I am not worried at all about Garrett Wilson's dynasty value because Garrett Wilson has shown that he can quietly become wide receiver 10 as long as he has a quarterback that can get him the football. And as I mentioned earlier, Geno Smith is not a quote-unquote sexy option, but he has shown, even on the Seattle Seahawks, that he can get the ball in the top wide receiver's hands, which the Las Vegas Raiders did not have at all last year. Geno Smith had that with Jaxon Smith-Njigba, DK Metcalf, and the what was left of Tyler Lockett in Seattle. But now that he's got Garrett Wilson, he's a stud wide receiver that can absolutely make a quarterback better, which also includes just, you know, whichever of the carousel of quarterbacks the Jets have had, which have struggled. But being that it's going to be Geno for a little bit, I'm not worried about Garrett Wilson's dynasty value. Big draft capital in Omar Cooper or Kenyon Sadiq. If anything, adding those guys are going to help Garrett Wilson so that he's not double teamed all the time. So no, I don't need to see them hit first. I just need to hold on to Garrett Wilson and treat him like a wide receiver too on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Garrett Wilson is a guy who's proved he's going to just command targets. And I don't think we have yet to see that from either of these two guys. And even if they do, I still think Wilson's going to be the leading target receiver in that offense for the foreseeable future. So, like you said, even with bad quarterbacking, like he's been able to do, like last year, I mean, he only played a handful of games, but he was still in average points per game in TA scoring, wide receiver 14. So, like, it's like no matter how bad the Jets quarterbacking is, he finds a way to at least produce at a wide receiver 2 level. And he has the capability of wide receiver 1 production on a consistent basis if they ever get a decent, like, just decent quarterbacking, I feel like. So,
yeah, until he got injured, he was getting over, well, his rookie year, 147 targets, sophomore year, 168, and his third year, 154. Like, if he didn't get hurt, he'd be looking at those same target values.
Yep.
That's a stud. Studs, and anybody who's not a stud doesn't get those targets.
Yeah, exactly. And he's still going to command targets no matter who else is there. But, Mark, any other thoughts on this whole Jets thing?
No, I'm not going to add much. I wouldn't really put any stock into either of these rookies until they show it anyway. And yeah, Garrett Wilson is probably the only piece that I'm like legitimately, you know, considering targeting in the Jets offense. And I don't see why any of this would change that for me.
Okay, let's start with you while we move from one bad offense to another. Who, if anybody, are you targeting among the 2026 Miami pass catchers? Somebody has to catch the ball, right? Is it crazy that I've talked myself into Tolbert and even Dulcich in tight end premium leagues?
Okay, so I just want to be clear. You should not be targeting any of them.
Yes.
But
that's my answer.
Yeah, you should not be targeting any of them. If you're asking which one I like the most, it's probably Malik Washington. And if you're trying to say, like, oh, what, the price of one is more valuable than the other, they're all pretty dirt cheap. So if you're asking which one I like more, it's probably Washington, and that's the end of it. But the answer is don't target any of them. If you know the one you like happens to like come into a throw in a trade and like that sweetens it enough for you, sure, fine, go for it. But like, please do not target these players.
My answer is the only one I'm targeting at all is Chris Bell in the second round. I have no interest in the Miami pass catchers for 2026, like actually in 2026. But he technically qualifies for this question because he will be on the team in 2026. So, but that's more of a long-term thing anyway. But Evan, is there any value here whatsoever?
I would say for redraft leagues, no, there is not. And I would say for immediate value in 2026, the answer is Devon Achane. Because I think they're going to be running the football a lot this coming year while they figure out how they want to develop their passing game. And with the former Packers defensive coordinator, now the new head coach of the Miami Dolphins, I think that's going to be great for DST and IDP. But I don't think we're going to see a functional Miami Dolphins offense for at least 2 years, if not longer. I love me some Chris Bell, too. I can't wait until he heals from this ACL tear to show his stuff, because he's my favorite rookie that the Dolphins drafted out of all their other guys. But Greg Dulcich doesn't move the needle for me, and I think it's going to... I'm out on Malik Washington, too. The opportunities that he got as a wide receiver 3 were not good at all. He can get some good, like, possession yardage, but it's never enough for a first down, and I'm out on Malik Washington. I'm just going to target Devon Achane and then hope that Malik Willis can offer some, like, sneaky QB2 value on an inconsistent basis.
Okay, and... next question. How much do you play each of your dynasty leagues with a portfolio mindset, which I think you're both in not a lot of leagues. So I don't know how much this might be a question more for me. But as he's asking, because I was surprised recently that my top owned players were only 3 of 7 leagues each. Is that good, bad, other? How many leagues means you should start playing portfolio style? Well, that's a more general question. I'm curious what you got. I don't know that there's a strict number on that. What do you think, Evan?
I definitely like to keep a portfolio mindset when I'm in more than one dynasty league, and right now I'm in 3. I don't necessarily like keeping my portfolio consistent with a lot of like same shares. I like to diversify if I can. But you know, the situations for both of the dynasty teams that I inherited are also, one is a rebuild and another is kind of neutral, kind of still trying to build up to a championship. But outside of that, I still have one dynasty league which is not drafting rookies until the end of July, so we've got some time to see what they do in training camp before we make those decisions too. But yeah, as far as a portfolio mindset, I like diversifying. I don't typically like to get the same shares if I can help it, but a little bit of crossover doesn't hurt.
And Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, but now you said you're in 5 leagues, but I think at one point you were a little bit more degenerate like some of the rest of us in dynasty.
Yeah, I
10,
felt
12
I
up, somewhere. In
I
there,
got up to 12, and I yeah. felt like it was a little too much. Not that I don't like playing, but just like it's not as fun for me when you're maintaining that many.
Well, so especially when you were up to double digits, was it a thing that you were thinking about? Were you trying?
I would say it was slightly a thing I was thinking about, but like for the most part, it was more like get your guys within your portfolio, right? Like because if you're really up in like the 30s, or I mean, like we know people that are in 60 plus leagues, some people, then yeah, sure, put a portfolio together and really try and stick to that ledger. But I mean, if you're playing less than 10, if you feel like you can manage, you know, those 10, I still think you're playing for the fun of it. And like, you should really just be more interested in getting your guys. And I'm not saying like have the same guys on all 10 teams, but, you can easily diversify a little bit while still staying within this is the group that I'm rocking with. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And for me, I'm actually down to 24 now. I've definitely resided for a lot of the last few years in the 30s range. At one point, I think like 4 or 5 years ago, I was high as 40 at one point. So I'm getting down there. And to be clear, I almost have to be in 17 of those leagues because 11 are Trade Addicts and 6 I commish. So I'm only in 7 outside of Trade Addicts and the ones I commish. So I'm getting better. I don't like have a strict portfolio kind of mindset where I have to have X number of shares or anything like that. It's just something I think about more so in a general sense, like what I was saying earlier, like I tend to, especially like now I'm in multiple rookie drafts, I will, I'll be like, I want to get at least this one Sadiq share. I want to get at least one Lemon share. I want to get at least one, like that kind of thing. And trying to, especially in a draft class like this, where I don't trust almost anybody, then I like kind of, Russ would call them just in case shares. Like even players I don't like, I will draft and make sure I have one on my roster in case they blow up. Even though I don't like, because there's many, I've been wrong on many, many players over in drafts over the years. So, in terms of like trading for guys, though, I think it is more just I like to get my guys. I don't tend to have anybody that I have like on half my teams with this many teams, but I don't purposely try and not to or sell just because I do. If I like a guy, I'm generally just gonna have him on my team, and if the opportunity comes up for good value, I'll move him. But I don't tend to do the portfolio thing as intensely as detailed as some people do. But what you said about your question too, about 3 of 70, I feel like that's fine. He said, "Is it good, bad, other?" I guess I would say it's other. Like I don't think it's a big deal one way or the other if you have guys in 3 of 7 leagues. Like that's, you like the guy, then it's fine.
The only thing that matters is, are they helping you win? I don't think it matters how many of the top owned players you have in X amount of leagues. Just get the wins.
Yes, exactly. Okay.
Right. And it should be said that like every league, like the marketplace is different. So it's just going to dictate. It's going to be dictated by one, who you already have, and then what everybody else wants to do in those leagues, because that's where you're going to find the values in the trade you're looking for. You're not, when we talk about these trades, like you're not going to be able to execute all of them in every single league that you have, right? I mean, some people will certainly try, but you can't necessarily do that. Every marketplace, it's an ecosystem. It's completely separate from what other dynasty leagues are doing. So you really just have to make the moves where you can make the moves. And again, if you're trying to get your guys, like those are the people that I'm pursuing. Like I'm not pursuing people I don't want for the sake of getting, you know, a good shared portfolio. I'm trying to get the trades that I'm trying to trade for the players that I want, and it's going to work in these few leagues and it's not going to work in these few leagues. And then, you know, the next person that I'm targeting comes up, and then it's going to work in these leagues, and when it's not going to work in those leagues, you know, it's just kind of how it's going to go.
And Mark, I just want to clarify.
Sorry, you brought up a great point. Yeah, Mark, you brought up a great point that I absolutely love preaching as well, because there's no such thing as universal value in Dynasty. It only stops at the leagues that you're in and how everybody in that league values X, Y, and Z players. There's a lot of people in Dynasty community who want that universal value, which is why we have resources like Keep Trade Cut and so on and so forth. Sometimes you need that external reference to make sure that you're not getting screwed in a trade. But I mean, I disagree with Keep Trade Cut more often than I agree, but that's a different story. But ultimately, there's no universal value. Don't look for it. Just look for the best value you can get for your players.
I just want to clarify too that, like, because something Mark said in there made me think of it, is I generally don't look for guys either that I don't like what he was saying. That was more of a draft thing. I don't trade for guys just to have just in case shares. It's mostly just because we don't know what these draft picks are. So that's kind of when I will grab guys that I don't quote unquote like, but. Like I said, I've been wrong on guys before, and guys I've drafted that I didn't like ended up being good. So it makes more sense there than like what Mark said. You know, trading for someone that you're kind of met on just to diversify your portfolio. And then this last question, I think we started with one, and we're going to end with another Frank question, even though he's not here. For those not currently in Chicago, what's the latest news about the Bears relocation? Are they really going to freaking Indiana? Also, do either of you watch and love the TV show The Bear like I do? Did you see the new episode about Gary? Frank's answer was that he's never seen The Bear and thinks the stadium will be in Arlington Heights. Did either of you watch The Bear?
I don't watch The Bear, but as a Chicago Bears fan as well, just like Frank, I think the stadium is going to remain in Chicago. Right now, the McCaskey family, what they're doing with the city of Chicago is the same thing they've been doing for at least 50 years. They always have to have this back and forth with new ways to negotiate getting everything exactly what they want. And right now, the goal is to get a brand new stadium built adjacent to Soldier Field, to have like a brand new complex along Lake Michigan, similar to like what a lot of other football franchises have in like a little, not like a promenade style, but like a whole what do you call it? Like a quad type of thing. So I think ultimately that's what the Chicago Bears are still aiming for, and it's just going to take years to get there. The Arlington Heights purchase is so that the McCaskey family can make their money outside of football season.
And Mark, you the Bear watcher?
You know, I watched a few episodes of The Bear. I couldn't really quite get into it. I've heard good things. And then honestly, usually what happens is if I don't like really get into a show, like from the first three or four episodes, I'm going to wait and see what happens. And then, I heard season three wasn't as good as it used to be, but I will say, I really love that TikTok, where the guy is pretending to be like he's on The Bear, but instead of making actual like gourmet food, the entire kitchen is making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. That's my favorite. That's like one of my favorites. If I've heard maybe it's coming back around, so I might have to jump back in.
Yeah, I've watched the first two seasons of The Bear. It is really good. I keep meaning to watch it, and I heard the same thing you did, that season three wasn't that good, and I didn't watch it when it first came out, and I still haven't, and now season four is out, and I still haven't watched season three or four. So I need to get back to it. But the first two are really, really good. So I would definitely recommend, but I've obviously not seen this new episode. I did see that they released, I think I saw on Twitter that they released some like hidden episode or secretly filmed episode or something like that. It's not really part of any season, but, so now that brings us to the trades, and I don't know how to work the sounder. So sorry, you're not going to get Brian Hart Trade Addicts Trades.
Trade Addicts Trades.
There you go, Mark. Thanks. Reminder, TA leagues are 12-team Superflex PPR tight end premium, 1.75 tight end premium with 0.05 per return yard, except TA1, but we don't have any TA1 trades. So we will start in TA3, and you can tell that it's draft season, and that almost all the drafts have either started or were ending this past week, because we have a lot of trades this week, way more than we've had probably all year so far. So starting in TA3, we have Cam Skedaboo, 27-3rd, 28-1st, for a 27-1st and 2nd and a 28-2nd. So, Evan, what do you think of this one?
So what I'll preface all of these trades with is that if I can't see your team, then I'm not going to know for sure how this is going to make or break it, because context always matters for every single trade. But being that this is the Trade Addicts podcast, fuck it, let's do it.
Yeah, we just do these in a vacuum. Yeah, we will sometimes provide context if me or Frank is the one making the trade. But generally, it's just the idea of, yeah, the in a vacuum, quote-unquote, universal trade value here.
So, ultimately, if you were just looking to get rid of Cam Scataboo because you don't believe in the Giants' run game, I am 100% fine with this, because you got back a 28 first. If you're a doubter in the 2027 draft class, like I have some skepticism about it, then I think that's totally fine if you just wanted to... I don't know what these picks are expected to be, if it's high, mid, or low, or whatever. I guess it doesn't matter, but if you wanted to get rid of Cam Scataboo, I think this is fine.
What about you, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, it's all right. It's really hard to tell at this stage of the game, but I imagine just the way that it was looking. This is in TA3, and I know the guy who had Scataboo was kind of fishing for any 27 first that he could get in a Scataboo trade. He had sent a couple offers to me as well. And I think he got what he wanted. It's hard to know, really, like, especially I don't really have a good read on the 28 draft class, but really, like, if this ends up being like, okay, well, this is a mid to late 27 first, and then this 28 first ends up being like the 101, like, what, you know, you could end up really making out. So I think it's fine. It seems like you're probably overvaluing the 27 first, but I don't know. It should be all right.
And see, I actually think I like the 27 first side. The way I was kind of looking at it, maybe I'm undervaluing Cam Scataboo, because I was looking at it as you're pushing the 28 into 27, like in this trade, you're trading a 28 and getting a 27 first back. And Cam Scataboo in a third for 2 seconds is fine to me. Like I said, maybe I'm undervaluing him. I'm not a huge Scataboo. I love watching him. He's fun to watch. But as a fantasy prospect, I'm kind of not super enthused about him. So I kind of think I'd rather lean getting the earlier first, and I'm fine moving off Scataboo for those picks, is basically how I looked at it.
Yeah. The one thing I'll say is, I like, again, the 28 being 2 years out, I feel good enough about the 27 first and all that side of the package. It really comes down to, what do you feel about Scataboo? I think he'll probably have a pretty good year this year. And if he doesn't, you have that 28 first to fall back on. So, yeah, you know, it's kind of six of one, half dozen of the other.
Okay. This next one is me. So I'm curious to see what you guys think, but RJ Harvey and Zay Flowers for the 105, which became Mekhi Lemon, the 405 and the 406. He had to have those two fourths. That's a joke, but he did want, he wanted a little something. So I'm telling you now which side I got, basically, because I was forced to add the fourths. So Evan, what do you think?
So taking on RJ Harvey and Zay Flowers for what that all gave up, I don't think I like this long term. I think Mekhi Lemon would have been better for you long term. Don't get me wrong, I love me some Zay Flowers, but I am not that high on RJ Harvey. I think there's a reason that the Broncos added more running backs in this draft. I don't think they're going to make... Sean Payton hates fantasy football, and he's going to make sure that none of the running backs on the Broncos offense are ever consistent. So if you wanted somebody like an RJ Harvey to take a shot on for like flex value, that's probably fine. But without seeing your team, Rocky, I think that Lemon would have been better long term.
What about you, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Lemon side, is just because it's a rookie pick, is a little sexier. I think it's closer than people are going to make it out to be. I still do like Zay Flowers, and he probably will be. I mean, if you're looking for to compete this year, Zay Flowers is probably going to be more useful, beneficial to your team. I don't know. It seems pretty even to me. If you're out on RJ Harvey, I get that. But I think two fourth round picks is not like, you know, it's, I probably would still rather have Harvey in that situation. It's not like he's not going to play at all this year.
Yeah, and I was kind of iffy on this myself. Part of the reason I made it is for the show. and at that point, we did not have 14 trades already. So I figured, why the hell not? I'm kind of iffy on whether I'm a contender. But I also felt like I was getting two young pieces back, too. Like, Zay Flowers is still only 25. Right. So it's not like he's old. And RJ Harvey's obviously he wasn't a young guy coming in, like, young rookie coming in the league. But he's still only in his second year. So I think there's potential for growth from him. And like you said, I do like Flowers a lot. And I think he looked good at times last year, even with Lamar having a pretty down year. Like, you know, he was in and out of the lineup. He was clearly hurt when he was in the lineup a lot of the time. So, and Lemon, Lemon, I do like Lemon. Obviously, he's an Eagle. I'm an Eagles fan. But he is a question mark. I mean, like, we all like him. He's a good prospect. But we've had many, 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 many good prospects come into the league that did not pan out. So,
Jalen Reagor.
Yes, exactly. I liked Reagor, too. I liked the pick when they made it.
I did, too, actually. I even traded for him, and it flopped.
Yeah, I mean, I like Jefferson better, who I think went right after him, I believe. But, yeah, I did actually like the Reagor pick. But so I took Harvey and Flowers, and like I said, it was partially because I figured, why not? It was close enough for me. Let's make the trade for the show. But I do like the potential there of those two, and I agree. Harvey is definitely a big question mark with the way the running back situation is set up in Denver. But he did show some flashes last year, too. They did like to use him a lot around in the red zone, too, as well.
What it comes down to for me, and if I have to project what the rookie is going to be, which I really do hate to do most of the time, I feel like Lemon is more of a guy who's a better receiver for your NFL team than he is for your fantasy team. And again, I could be wrong about that, but I just feel like Devontae Smith is probably he is their number one receiver with AJ Brown leaving. And I feel like it could be more of a toss-up between, you know, him and Stowers being the second pass-catching option after that. So it's, for me, I just feel like I feel a little more comfortable with Lamar and Zay Flowers. He's, you know, he's 1A, especially with, you know, probably 1A and with Andrews being 1B. But I think he's still more in the mix, although they are a pretty run-heavy team.
Yeah. And we can't escape the Jets this episode. Garrett Wilson for Christian Watson, Jalen Naylor, and the 110, which then became Eli Stowers. So, Evan, what do you think?
I love the Garrett Wilson side, and many of you listening might think I'm crazy, but hear me out first. Christian Watson is in a Green Bay Packer offense where, yeah, he's going to get some amazing games where maybe he catches 7 passes for 2 touchdowns just because that's the way game script went, but the way the Packers run their offense is that they love to throw the ball to the tight end, which is Tucker Kraft, and then they love to run the football. This is essentially how the Buffalo Bills play. The Packers and Bills essentially play the same way. So I don't want to invest too heavily in Christian Watson. If I can get rid of him, I'm happy to get back a stud in a Garrett Wilson. Jalen Naylor, same thing. It's crazy because the Las Vegas Raiders paid Jalen Naylor a 3-year, $35.03 million contract to essentially be the top wide receiver on the Raiders. That's how you know they're in trouble, and it's probably going to be more of the Brock Bowers show in Las Vegas. So I want Jalen Naylor off of every roster where I have him, and I am a non-believer in Eli Stowers as well. I don't think he's proven anything yet. His prospect profile is juicy and sexy as all can be, but I don't know if that's necessarily going to translate to the way the Philadelphia Eagles play football, where they love to run the football. And Dallas Goedert is there for one more year, but I think that they probably want to stick Stowers in the Goddard role, but if you've seen how inconsistent Goddard can be when he's not scoring touchdowns, that's not going to be fantasy friendly. So to get rid of those three guys for Garrett Wilson, great trade.
Yeah, I don't think we need to discuss too much about this. Again, Stowers to me is a little sexy, but if let's go back to the target share Garrett Wilson was getting. If Christian Watson is seeing 150 targets, his hamstrings are turning to jello, and there is no way that he's on the field. So I think it's a pretty easy let's take Garrett Wilson here.
Yeah, I think this is severely undervaluing Garrett Wilson. And I even like Stowers. But Again, also a question mark. He's a guy being drafted in the back half of a first round nobody really likes, rookie draft wise. And Garrett Wilson, like we talked about earlier, is just proven production, even with bad quarterbacking. Christian Watson and Jalen Naylor mean nothing to me in this trade, honestly. It's just, and Stowers is definitely not enough for Garrett Wilson, plus two, like, dart throws, basically, in my opinion.
Do either of you know if the guy who traded Garrett Wilson is rebuilding, just ripping apart the team?
I would have to guess so.
I can look that up if one of you want to talk for.
Yeah, I'll talk. I imagine that this is a trade that was made before the picks came out, right? And that, well, I mean, maybe it wasn't, but like when you see Christian Watson in a first for Garrett Wilson, maybe this looks a little better. We all know that this 26 class is not nearly as good as any of us had hoped, or you know, and we've all been projecting that it wouldn't be that great. I think Stowers at 110 is not a bad value getting him. But I think you need this to be like the 103 or the 10, you know what I mean, or the 102, for this to maybe really feel better. But even still, I'm like, I think you're just better off holding Garrett Wilson, even if you're rebuilding. You can't just get rid of guys that good.
And honestly, he's not. This is a guy trying to contend. He has Derrick Henry on his roster, Chuba Hubbard, Mark Andrews, Jared Goff. I mean, there's also some young guys on there, but this is a guy that's trying to contend.
I see. Okay. Yeah, because I was going to say, even with that, that sounds like this guy is disrespecting Garrett Wilson, getting rid of him for so few pieces. Yeah. Like, you could have gotten so much more for Garrett Wilson, but again, like, this, for some reason, this screamed of a trade that guys who love to rip apart their team do just for the sake of ripping it apart, but I'm glad this was not the case.
Yeah. Okay, but we'll move on to TA5 now. This is, I think, the only other trade that I made on here, which is the 103. This is actually me and Russ. 103, which became Carnell Tate, for Brian Thomas Jr., Michael Pittman, and a 27 first.
Hmm. That's a fascinating trade.
Go for
it. Was that Mark? First.
No, I was just going to say I love the Thomas Pittman 27 first side, probably.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Mark. I think, don't get me wrong, I think landing Carnell Tate is still great even before he proves himself to be NFL worthy, but to give up that much value at wide receiver and then take on and then give away a 27 first, which could probably be used on another stud running back or something like that, I think that you gave up way too much just to invest in Carnell Tate. So I see the vision, but Rocky, did you say this was your trade?
Yes.
Which one did you give away?
I got the receiver side with the 27 first.
Bravo, sir. Bravo.
This was actually... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'd like to think that, you know, Tate has a little more value than both of those, but there is a very easy world you can see where Brian Thomas is the better receiver from this point on to the end of their careers. And, like, honestly, I think you could say about either... Not that I'm, like, a huge Michael Pittman fan, and him being on the Steelers, but I think there's also a world where Pittman could give pretty close to the same value as Tate this year. If you're, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying it's definitely possible.
Yeah. And my thinking was, I don't think I have any BTJ shares before I made this trade. So I didn't have him when he broke out in his rookie season. And I know, he went way down, but I still like taking the shot on him to rebound and getting the 27. The 27 first is likely mid to late. It's likely a playoff 27 first. But still, I still felt it was too good. Yeah, especially, again, my thing is always with these, no matter how good of a prospect they are, especially receivers to me, I feel like are going to bust more often than like, say, running backs usually, for at least first-round rookie draft running backs. So I'm always willing to try and cash in to get like that 27 first value or take a chance on a guy like Brian Thomas Jr. And Michael Pittman was kind of, I probably would have done this without Pittman in the trade, but he sent it to me this way. So I probably would have done it for BTJ at 27 first, but, so yeah, it seemed definitely just worthwhile to me. I just, all those pieces, I think all those pieces in theory could be better than Carnell Tate. Like, even Michael Pittman, like you said, like, if Carnell Tate busts, We don't know what Carnell Tate is for sure.
I would say that the likelihood that Pittman outperforms Tate is about the same that Tate outperforms all three of these assets. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they're both not very likely.
Yeah.
But they both can definitely happen.
Yes. And then the other trade they made in TA5 was also a pretty big one. And I'll throw this one to you first, Mark. Ashton Jeanty for Drake London and a 27 third.
Mm. I think it's probably Drake London still. I do like Jeanty. I have a couple shares of him. But I have no faith in that offensive line, really. I'm sure Mendoza will probably play some point during the year. And I'm sure Cousins will probably have to check down to him a ton. But I don't know. This is the same thing with why I don't really invest in the Jets, and offensive. Like, I don't like teams that the offense, like, is already projecting to be bad. The offensive line is bad. And especially teams like that, that say like, yeah, we want to run the ball to maintain the time of possession, maintain the field. But like, usually what happens is they end up just getting stopped and they don't end up on the field all that much. So I'm a little wary of Jeanty.
I'm with you. I to me, this is pretty easily the Drake London side for me. Especially because with Kubiak coming in and the addition of Mike Washington, that makes it even clearer for me. Like, I was already a little iffy, like you said, just because of the whole offense and what we saw from, like, he had his moments, but it's tough to you know, be a stud in the Raiders offense anyway. So I think I want Drake London here, and especially not that a 27 third is a ton, but I'm even getting a little bit of something on top. I'll take Drake London. You agree, Evan?
Oh, 100%. I don't agree at all with trading a young running back for giving away a wide receiver, a young wide receiver for a young running back, because running backs in Dynasty will typically net you 4 prime years for Dynasty value, where a wide receiver will typically get you 8 or 9. So the fact that somebody gave away Jeanty for Drake London, I don't like that at all. I am not worried about Mike Washington taking away any value from Jeanty. If anything, that's going to help take some extra loads off of Jeanty, being that they're not going to run him into the ground the way they did Josh Jacobs years ago. I don't know how the hell Jacobs is still going on the Packers. It's like the Raiders tried to kill Jacobs and failed to do so. But regardless, I think the fact that you got Drake London and a 27 third in exchange for Ashton Jeanty, if you're already great at running back, that's a phenomenal trade to get back better wide receiver value.
Okay, so now we're going to move on to TA8. And I did try and in a lot of instances avoid pick for pick trades, but I decided to throw anything that had a first in it on the sheet. I was avoiding, you know, seconds for thirds and that kind of thing. But I think it is interesting to just kind of gauge how much, you know, the firsts are worth and things like that. So this one is a 28 first for 110, which then became Eli Stowers. Evan, what are your thoughts? Are you giving up a 28 first to get into the back end of the first round of this draft?
If you can wait that long to make that pick, then I'm fine with it, because if that 110 became Eli Stowers, I don't know if this pick was given away before Stowers was drafted, Stowers, but if it just became Stowers after the draft, then yeah.
Yeah, every pick trade on here was made either on the clock or before they were on the clock.
Got it, yeah. So, being that pick was spent on Eli Stowers, I'm fine with it if you can wait that long for a first-round pick in 2028. Because, like I said earlier, I'm not that big of a believer in Stowers. I think he'll maybe show some promise down the road, but with the way the Eagles run their offense, I'm not looking for another top-10 tight end out of him.
What about you, Mark?
I think it's probably the 28 first for me, and it really comes down to the idea that both of these assets aren't going to be worth that much until a year and a half from now. I'm more interested in just letting the 28 value continue to climb, because it will. And maybe Stowers breaks out. Like, honestly, like, there is a chance Stowers breaks out. I'm hoping for it in the places that I have him. But I'm not holding my breath for it either.
Yeah, I famously on the pod have, you know, talked about not quite valuing a first three drafts out as much as I do say a 27 first or obviously a 26 first. Although in this case, with the specifics of the draft class, that changes a little bit because this one is very mediocre. But I actually really like what you said there, and you kind of sold me on that idea too. I think I'd rather have the 28 first, even though I'm not a big 2 years out pick guy, because like you said, Stowers is basically a 2 years out asset probably. At least one, but maybe even two. And he has much more potential to decline in value than the 28 first does anyway. So you're locked into his performance, right, or you're not locked into anything with the 28 first.
It's the guarantee of that pick value going up versus the chance that Stowers would go down.
Yep. Okay, so next one is more of a players and picks. Jordan Love, a 28 third and fourth for Kyler Murray, the 105, which again became Lemon, 406 and 408, which haven't been picked yet. Evan, what are your thoughts on this one?
This is a fascinating one, knowing that it's super flex and tight end premium here. Why in your right mind would you give away Jordan Love for Kyler Murray, who might be playing in his final NFL season for all we know? If you're already rich at quarterback, maybe I could see it, but I'm just puzzled on why somebody would give away Jordan Love for essentially all of that. Like, if you believe in Mekhi Lemon that much, good for you, I guess, but I think that whoever gave away Jordan Love for all of that definitely put themselves at a disadvantage.
What do you think, Mark?
I definitely see Evan's point. I think that Jordan Love is definitely the safer asset. But seeing as I am in the chair that Frank should be sitting in this podcast, I'm going to say that I like the Kyler and Mekhi Lemon side because I know that he thinks Jordan Love is ass. So we're going to... honestly, like, I do... And I'm saying this also because I do believe that there can be a Kyler reclamation here, especially in Minnesota. I think I really like what they did with adding Juwan Jennings. And I think that Kyler, you know, within an offense that's a little more competent, has a little more competent play calling than the dumpster fire that is Arizona. Sorry to Cardinals fans. I think that there's a chance that he's not as bad as, you know, everyone is making him out to be just because he failed in Arizona. Like, again, like, I don't necessarily ding players who fail when they're on the Jets or the Raiders if they have another chance to come back and reclaim, because we've seen a lot of these quarterback reclamations over the past few years, and they go to more competent ownership groups and front offices, and they end up being just fine.
And I'm it's funny too, because not only does he not like Jordan Love, but this is a pro Kyler pod in general for both me and Frank. So I think he probably would have picked that side too. And I kind of lean that way as well, in part because I am pro Kyler. Although I agree, like Evan said, I could see a world where Kyler bombs, Mekhi isn't that great, and this looks easily Jordan Love in a year. I can definitely see that.
Oh. But again, 100% Jordan Love's side is way safer. Yeah. But the Kyler side is way more fun to go to.
It is. And I like you said, I too believe that like Kyler could have a reclamation in Minnesota. Other than JJ McCarthy, Kevin O'Connell has done well with quarterbacks there. And Kyler Murray, for fantasy anyway, has always generally produced as at least at a low end QB1 level. I agree with you. I think he's probably a better NFL receiver than fantasy receiver, but I do think he'll be a solid asset. I don't know if I'd say I think Jordan Love is ass, but I am a little...
Frank said it, okay?
That's true.
Frank okay. Talking through me, okay?
Yeah, you're channeling Frank. But Jordan Love, I'm probably below consensus on kind of how I value him, too. Like, he's fine, but he doesn't do a lot for me. I'm sorry. Did you? It looks like you may have been saying something else, Evan, before I move on. I just want to make sure you didn't have any. Okay.
No, not for this trade. But as we move on to this next trade here, what picks and what years were these next ones that you're about to read?
Well, I was actually going to pair these two together because this is in this draft. I think we're up to 112 in this draft. So someone traded. I wanted to talk about these two together. Someone traded 201 and 203 to get to 108. And then before picking, traded the 108 to someone else for 28 first and second. So within the span of like a couple hours, basically turned 201 and 203 into a 28 first and second.
All right, then.
Yeah. And the pick, by the way, was Jadarian Price, which I know a lot of people do like Jadarian Price. But my question more was talking about these trades, especially since they're all just pick for pick, essentially. Do you think the first one is an underpay, the second one is an overpay, or neither?
Go ahead, Mark.
Go ahead. Okay. All right. So, no, it's fine. I'll take it. I think the 201 and 203 is probably an underpay. Yeah. I'm not a huge believer in Jadarian Price, but I definitely see his value this year. I think the move to go from 201 to 203 and then to the 28 first and second is definitely a huge win, though. He knew something that we didn't when he was making knew something that we didn't, that like maybe it was out there, and that somebody just really wanted Jadarian Price. I don't see a problem. I don't know why, in my eyes, why the 108 guy would trade for the 201 and 203. That would just be my thought process.
And what about you, Evan?
100% with Mark on this one. I don't understand that, where it's like, if Jadarian Price falls to the 108, that's amazing value for a running back who was drafted 32nd overall. He's going to be the guy in Seattle, being that Zach Charbonnet is not going to be ready for week one. And even when Charbonnet comes back, I don't think he's going to be stealing much of Jadarian Price's work. So I don't understand why you would trade down to the 201 and 203, considering how weak on paper this draft class is. And then the person who took Jadarian Price gave him away for value 2 years down the road. I don't understand what the hell they were thinking with that anyway. Keep Jadarian Price. He's going to be fine.
Yeah. And I basically agree with you guys. I kind of think I do not want to go down from 108 to 201 and 203. I also, though, think that's both an underpay and that the other one is maybe a slight overpay. I don't think I would get
I can't figure out how you knew to risk this to get the 28 first. That's kind of where I am. But again, I think Price is probably fine. Where you got him is definitely good. So I think it's the 28 first and second person, and then Jadarian Price, whoever ended up with those two sides of the deal, did pretty well.
And then we're going to finish up with some TA9 trades. This is another pick one. I'm just curious if you think this is worth it. And this, by the way, Mark, no one else, is going to mean nothing to anyone else, but a friend of ours, Elliot, is actually the one who made this trade. He traded the 101 for the 103 and a 27 first. The 101 was obviously Love. The 103 became Tate. But Evan, what do you think of this one? Are you willing to give up a 27 first to move from Tate to Love?
Yes, I absolutely would if I needed a running back badly enough. Now, which side did Elliot have?
He had the 101.
Okay, so he gave it away to move into the 27 first round, probably a believer in next year's draft class. I could see it, but at the same time, I am judging Elliot because I have no reason in my mind to give away Jeremiah Love because there are no other running backs like him in this draft class. And at the same time, who's to say down the road that running backs within the next 2 or 3 years are going to be anything at all like Jeremiah Love? The Arizona Cardinals badly needed a guy to run the football with, and Love is going to get a lot of carries. Have you seen the running backs they had last year? Holy shnikes, they were all ass. They were all terrible. Connor got hurt. Okay, it happens. But James Connor is pushing 30 at this point, and I think he is 30, actually. So, you know, they had to get somebody, but I have no reason in my mind to not take Jeremiah Love this year if you have the 101, but if Elliott really wanted to get into next year's draft class for some reason, okay, I guess I can see it.
Actually, you are praising Elliott's side. I had it backwards. I just checked to make sure. So in case Elliott happens to listen, he got Love.
Okay.
So you agree with it. Oh. You agree with what Elliott did there.
Bravo, Elliott!
Yeah. I would take Jeremiah Love. I think it really comes down to what you feel about Carnell Tate. But yeah, I think it's hard to take. I mean, like, Jeremiah Love is the 101 and like really should, like, it's not a discussion in for redraft, not redraft, for super flex or one quarterback. So
yeah.
I think it's, again, if that 27 first pans out into something, you know, really good for you, then you can look like you won. But I imagine this has something to do with the fact that, like, maybe this guy's not contending this year and doesn't feel like they need the running back and is hoping that they can help tank their team and has a bevy of 27 firsts that they are looking to cash in on.
Yes.
I guess I've been playing, I've been jaded too long with Dynasty for so long that I know that if there's a stud running back you can get, you can take him because running backs are so hard to come by in fantasy football that it blows. It, like, if you're great at running back and you don't need Jeremiah Love, who do you have?
Okay. And then the same guy who traded down to the 103 and picked up the 27 first. Then traded down again, traded the 103,
okay,
which ended up being Tate, plus the 27 fourth for 107, which actually ended up being Lemon, which is about as low as I've seen him go, and which they obviously did not know at the time he was trading his 103. But 305 and a 28 first. So 103, which is Tate, a 27 fourth for 107, which became Mekhi Lemon, a 28 first and 305.
Okay, so this is just a rebuilder tearing down further because they don't feel like they have what they can to compete this year, and is hoping that they can hit in the 27 and then have some more picks in the 28 so they can maybe make a push then. I get the strategy, but I'm with Evan and with you. I think Jeremiah Love was just the better option to just stick with that.
I will say, I mean, looking at them in combination, I do like it maybe a little more knowing you're getting Lemon a 27 first and a 28 first for Love.
That's fair.
But I agree. I think definitely in the first one, I still like Love. I think I definitely do, in this, like, if you take this trade on its own, I definitely like the 107 side more. But I'm curious.
I think the way that
Sorry, well, go ahead,
especially
Evan.
Knowing you got Lemon, like, it's true he did not know he was getting Lemon, but I have basically a tier of the top six, so that would have scared me actually making the trade, but knowing after the fact you got Lemon, I like it a lot more.
The fact that Lemon fell to the 107 blows my mind, too. That's unbelievable. Who are people taking over Lemon at this point? Like, that's wild that he fell that low. I mean, granted, we were just talking about Lemon possibly being a better NFL wide receiver than a fantasy wide receiver, which, sure, it could be within the realm of possibility, but with A.J. Brown expected to be gone from the Eagles within about 3 weeks from the time of recording this episode, that Lemon value could go way up. But to give a, I mean, to trade down to take all of that, I like Mark just said, I get the strategy, but I don't agree with it. I think you need to get better studs to build your team rather than trading down to get, like, quantity over quality. You need quality if you need to rebuild that badly. Don't just rip apart your team for the sake of ripping it apart just to see who you can get in quantity. So yeah, I think I like the in the 103 side, I think still would have been better to hold on to. I mean, granted that Lemon at 107 is still blowing my mind.
Well, if you're curious, this is a very interesting draft. I just looked at it. Concepcion and Price both went in the top five.
Okay, so maybe what happened, did this trade happen after that then? That they
let me just double check, but I'm pretty sure he traded for this while it was, he made this trade while it was still the 103. Let me double check. Why can I not pull this up? This is great podcasting. 103. Yes, it was. I believe it was when the 103 was on the clock. So he did not, like, this wasn't trading for Tate after the fact or anything like that.
Okay.
All right.
Or trading for Lemon after the fact, I should say. Trading Dilly. Yeah, he didn't trade Tate to, like, take the 107 knowing Lemon was there. Is that, if that's what you were asking?
Yeah. Okay. Either way, I think we're good to move on. So
yeah. Okay, and then these ones are more player centric. This one does have picks. CJ Stroud and 208 for Malik Willis and the 111, which was Ty Simpson, which I think was made while the 111 was on the clock, but I'm not sure. But I also think Ty Simpson generally falls in that range if that was his target.
Yeah, so I have to side with the C.J. Stroud one here, being that C.J. Stroud has proven that he can get it done when he's got a competent offensive line and competent, healthy targets to throw the football to when guys are not getting injured. And taking on Malik Willis and then drafting Ty Simpson, I don't like the Ty Simpson draft pick. Ty Simpson only played in 15 college games in which he started, which were all in his senior year at Alabama. He lacks the college experience. He didn't get enough reps back then. It would be curious to see if Sean McVay can develop him behind Matthew Stafford, but at the same time, I have no faith in Ty Simpson. I think he's going to be another Anthony Richardson, and then Malik Willis, for some reason, got a three-year contract with the Dolphins. He's going to be like mid-range QB2 value on a consistent basis at best. You would have been better off just holding on to CJ Stroud. I don't like this at all. I think these are wasteful picks for a Superflex format, and whoever got back CJ Stroud, kudos to you.
I'm with you 100%. I think this is way underselling. See, I know he's, you know, become much less valued over the last year or two after his rookie year. But to me, these two guys could both not be starting in a year. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what Malik Willis's contract situation is, like if they can get out after 1 year. But regardless, Ty Simpson I don't think anybody here really likes Ty Simpson. and Malik Willis is fine, but CJ Stroud still has way more upside, and the pick difference Ty Simpson, whether it's Ty Simpson or the pick, it doesn't make enough of a difference to me. Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's an upside play, I guess, if you're hoping that one of these two is better than CJ Stroud, who I think is, I would say, you know, middle of the road, back, you know, high end super flex option. But I don't, yeah, I would be really hard pressed to think that Malik Willis or Ty Simpson do that for you. There's even with the 3 year contract, there's a pretty decent chance that the Dolphins are drafting a quarterback next year. So.
And then somehow, I think I know how, actually, because Frank actually took over a team, like, today in one of these leagues in TA9. We actually ended up with a full player on player trade, so I think he took over an orphan today and decided I wanted to start messing with it. No, this is the only trade, I think, with no picks on it at all. T. Higgins, Jalen Waddle, Christian Watson for Amon-Ra St. Brown and David Montgomery. A lot going on here.
Yeah, which side did Frank get here?
Frank got the Jalen Waddle, Christian Watson side.
Okay, yeah, so I could see it. It sucks to have to sell a stud wide receiver in Amon-Ra St. Brown, but you still got some solid wide receiver 2 value with upside with T. Higgins. I love Jalen Waddle going to the Broncos. I think he's definitely going to overtake Cortland Sutton in targets. I think he's going to be Bo Nix's new number one. And then Christian Watson, you could stick in it as some flex value when the Packers have the opportunity to throw touchdowns in the red zone. So, yeah, I don't mind that at all. Getting rid of an older David Montgomery on the Houston Texans who might end up splitting with Woody Marks, I think this is fine if you're fine at running back.
Yeah, I agree. I think you hate to lose Amon-Ra, and maybe you end up regretting it still for that reason. I guess it's a rebuild, though. Maybe now I'm talking myself back into the Amon-Ra side.
It's a really weird orphan. He's probably just trying to break it down into further pieces, like get better pieces. And
I think he's trying
to contend this year because it's sort of middle of the road ish.
Okay, if it's middle of the road, then okay. If it's an orphan that's middle of the road, I'm a little better off than this. But if it's like a bad orphan and he's getting rid of Amon-Ra for these pieces, I'm thinking maybe you're better off just being bad and having Amon-Ra.
Yeah, and I'm again, this is another two favorites of the pod in T. Higgins and Jalen Waddle. So I'm kind of pro that side. Like Evan, I am a huge fan of Waddle in Denver. I think that's going to go really well. And the Christian Watson side doesn't matter to me. Obviously, I love Amon-Ra. David Montgomery is whatever. I mean, I know he has a chance to have pretty decent opportunity there, but I also feel like this could be the year David Montgomery is completely cooked as well, and it doesn't even matter that he's going to get most of the opportunity in Houston. So yeah, I think I take the Higgins Waddle side, but yeah, it's not like a no brainer. It like you are giving up a major stud in Amon-Ra St. Brown. But that is the end of our show sheet. So that is the end of our show. Kind of knew this was going to be a long one with all the trades and questions and everything, but I appreciate you, staying here with us for 90 minutes, Evan. Way back at the beginning of this show, we asked you this, but I'm going to ask you again. Why don't you tell everybody who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do.
Glad those of you listening live or listening back on audio only. My name is Evan Sather. You can find me at barelyfantasy.bsky.social on Blue Sky. I don't participate on Twitter anymore. That's where I was, Barely Fantasy. And you can find me on YouTube as well at Barely Fantasy. So I am one of four people with the Fantasy Football Network. We're getting that YouTube channel started up mighty soon. We don't have content on it yet, but we're going to be doing a bunch of live shows. Be sure to subscribe to Barely Fantasy to catch me. Monday Night Mock Drafts with Evan is coming up this coming Monday, in which we just had Jeff Lambert on last night. And next week... next week and beyond, we're gonna have a lot of fantastic guests as well, so you don't want to miss it.
Okay, and I just want to again thank Mark for filling in on very short notice here. I think I asked him about 6 hours before the show was scheduled to start, so I really appreciate it. And with that, we'll finish up with our stuff. As always, if you like what you heard and you want to see our beautiful faces, you can sign up for the and you can see Mark framing and Evan framing their beautiful faces. Sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/tradeaddictspod. You also get access to our Discord, the Cool Kids Club. Lots of good conversation in there. Lots of trade talk. All kinds of good stuff in there. And then, obviously, also, please support Fantasy Cares. I'm stumbling over my words tonight. It's been too long. That's what happens after 90 minutes. But Trade Addicts Eliminator is also back. Sign-ups opened on Sunday. It's one of the only eliminators you can trade in. So go do that. And I think Frank has decided that if the winner wants to, they can get a spot on the pod for an episode and join us. And then Zach Reed Rookie Report is live. And then the Trivia Tuesday nights and Wednesday night hangout that Frank is always touting pretty much every week when we talk about Fantasy Cares. But with that, I think that's all we got. Good night, everybody.
Night, Rocky.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addict Podcast, a member of the DLS family of podcasts, and a proud member in the Dynasty Addict Podcast Network. Please follow your hosts at Dynasty Haha and at Dynasty FS Addict. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We will catch you next time on the Trade Addict Podcast. Poopy Pants. That is the best. See ya.